It's been a spooky weekend. Oh dear, baby.
Okay. Sorry. Okay, yes, it has been quite a spooky weekend, and we've just had a really spooky storm that's gone through our home place here. In our home city of Brisbane, and last time I heard it was heading off down to the Gold Coast. Was I hope my Gold Coast friends are okay. I hope we're all okay up here in Brisbane. Okay.
Yes.
It was spooky storm, and that is no exaggeration. It came from nowhere. Skies turned black, and you know, I've just finished telling my friends that I met over in the UK when I was over there with them. Obviously, that Brisbane doesn't have that many storms this time of the year. Yeah. Brisbane just says, hold my beer.
Pretty much. Well, thankfully it did hold off because last night we did a spooky ghost tour.
Ooh, yes, spooky ghost tour. It was fabulous.
So I definitely wanted to give that a shout out with a wonderful guide, Natalia.
Yeah, from Brisbane Ghost Tours.
That's the one, yeah. We did the other side of Toowong Cemetery.
It was absolutely fantastic. It was so good to hear the stories about those people's lives, and some of them were the founders of Brisbane.
Mm.
So it was really interesting from a historical point of view as well.
It was.
So thank you, Natalia.
So, so good. Highly recommend it. We are not sponsored by Brisbane Ghost Tours.
Definitely not, but if you want to,
yeah, do it.
Get in contact with us.
Yeah, we'll pass on the details.
We talk about history. You talk about history. Let's meet.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably should get on, though, because we do have a special episode this time around. So
it's our special Halloween.
Well, we're going to do the official intro for it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I jumped the gun again.
But the fact that we started out talking about spooky stuff should be a bit of a giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's also that time of the year.
Indeed. So let's get on with it.
Ooh.
What the?
History. 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 History.
Hello and welcome to What the History. In this episode, we've got two bizarre bits of spooky history to make you say, what the history and what the Halloween.
Yes, okay. So, well, Halloween is usually celebrated in the Northern Hemisphere this time of year.
It's spread everywhere.
Spread everywhere, but I prefer to celebrate Beltane.
There we go.
Those out there know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And if you haven't heard this before, we better introduce ourselves. I am Trevor Holland.
And I am Susie Holland. Hey, I just wanted to let you guys know that in my story, there is a theme of pregnancy and child loss. We will have a timestamp down below if you want to skip that part and go to the end of my story. Yeah, so it's a bit of a trigger warning and just wanted to let you guys know. Thanks.
And what bit of bizarre history do you have for us?
Oh my God, I absolutely love this story. I love the story so much. Okay, as our listeners know, I've recently just come back from abroad, and one of the awesome places I went to was Edinburgh, Scotland. Yay, Scotland! Because I wanted to experience as much of Edinburgh as I could in the 2 days, yeah, only 2 days, believe me, next time I go, it will be longer, and I went on a few walking tours. When I say a few, I mean four in less than 24 hours. Because I'm like that. Yay me. My feet were killing me by the end of it. And it was very informative, but ouch. But one of the stories that has stuck with me was when our tour guide took us to the grass market area in Edinburgh Old Town. And I was actually staying there as well. And I had already discovered grass market not long after I had arrived, as I did a wonderful explore down Cowgate, the name of the road I was staying on, and ended up in grass market. Now, incidentally, if you go to the end of Grass Market, look to your right and Edinburgh Castle looms into view. And I can tell you it is one of the most spectacular sights I have ever seen. Oh, God, it was stunning. But I digress. Let's go back to the Grassmarket area and what happened there. Now, apart from the busy road of Grassmarket, where the road is named after a small roundabout from Cowgate, so Cowgate goes into Grassmarket, the Grassmarket Square is largely pedestrian only, which makes it pretty good to have a look around the shops and pubs, okay, mostly pubs in the square and hotels. One pub in particular has a major reference to what I want to tell you about. That pub is called Maggie Dixon's, and she was a real person. In true Scottish pride for people they have a connection with, they name a pub after you. Bless them. Margaret Dixon, or Maggie to all and sundry, was a fish hawker, born either at the very end of the 17th or the very start of the 18th century, most probably in the town of Musselburgh, which is about 6 miles east of Edinburgh, when in 1723 her sailor husband, after running off to the sea, ran home and then off again with another woman. Though some sources did say that he was press gang for another ship, but either way, he left Maggie, and again, some sources say she either left for Kelso on the Scottish-English border or to Edinburgh. But all sources say that she ended up living in an inn where, in exchange for lodging, she worked in the inn. Now, this is where it starts going a little bit pear-shaped for Maggie, with the arrival of the innkeeper's son. And from all accounts, he was a rather dashing figure, and they began an affair as Maggie was still married at this time, and Maggie became pregnant. Of course, having a baby out of wedlock was a big no-no, and if Maggie let the pregnancy be known, she would be out of work with a child to support, so she concealed her growing belly. And this, again, is another big no-no with the Scottish Concealment of Birth Act of 1690, which forbade, and I quote from a book called A Treatise on Various Branches of the Criminal Law of Scotland, by John Burnett and Robert Craigie, and the quote is, "Concealment of pregnancy during the whole space, the not calling for and making use of assistance at the birth, and the child's being found dead or missing," end quote, a criminal offence. Again, here accounts vary, with the child either being born sickly and passing away soon after birth, or with Maggie taking her babe to the River Tweed with all intent to swiftly end the child's life. But taking a look at her wee babe, decided to leave the child in the reeds, where they passed away soon after from exposure. The babe's body was found, and fingers were soon pointed at Maggie as the instrument of the babe's demise. Apparently, Maggie didn't hide her belly from everyone. Please remember, in 18th century Scotland, that it didn't matter if a child was born sleeping, they were miscarried or subjected to infanticide. If a pregnancy was concealed and that child passes away, it was, and still is, against the law. Maggie was tried in Edinburgh and sentenced to death for her alleged crime. In her defence, Maggie tried to explain to the judge and jury that she went into premature labour and she didn't have time or strength to call anyone for help, and she didn't report the birth after the fact as she was too befuddled to do anything. It didn't matter, the death penalty stood. In Maggie's case, her death would come in the form of hanging. On the 2nd of September, incidentally, I was there on the 7th of September, in 1724, some sources say another date of 1st of February 1813, Maggie was taken to the very public Grassmarket to be hung by the neck. Her execution was very much attended, as executions were a cause for a macabre fun day out for all the family. The hangman, John Dalgleish, who was known as the chief hangman of Edinburgh, hit Maggie with a stick when she tried to loosen the noose with her now unbound hands, and the crowd threw stones at John for letting her hands go free, so her hands were rebound. Maggie was hanged with her family and friends in attendance, pronounced dead and given to the funeral cart to be taken back to the kirkyard of Inveresk, south of her hometown of Musselburgh, and placed in a wooden coffin and carted away with her family in tow. There was actually a fight between Maggie's family and the medical students gathering, who wanted to use Maggie's body to further medical science, which the family and friends won. So you can just imagine at the back there's this massive stoush going on as well, in true Scottish tradition. The funeral party stopped for a wee dram 2 miles out of Edinburgh in a village called Peffermill, when a party heard a furious knocking from the coffin. They took the coffin lid off and there was a very upset and very much alive Maggie causing her family to do the bolt. Maggie did the same, but in the other direction. So you can just imagine that outside the pub. When everyone had calmed down, Maggie pled her case and she was freed. After all, she had been pronounced dead and therefore had paid her debt to society and was now a free woman. Being dead dissolved her marriage too. Maggie went on to live for another 30 to 40 years, had several children, and from all accounts lived happily ever after, forever being known as Half Hanget Maggie. Maggie was also present at executions after that and would give the condemned a little pep talk, saying, "It's all right, love, nothing to worry about," before showing them the deep rope scar on her neck.
Wow.
Bless our cotton socks. I love this girl.
Just, yeah.
And you can go and obviously drink at Maggie Dixon's. It's a beautiful pub, very old, gorgeous. And it's just directly opposite where she was hanged. Bless.
But I can just imagine the party, the family, just you know, already probably deep in the cups. Just fleeing at the sight of her sitting up in this coffin.
Oh, can you imagine them legging it?
Oh, my dear.
Oh, Maggie, I am raising my cup of peppermint tea to you. There I am.
Excellent.
Raising it. Literally, I'm raising it. I have a cup of peppermint tea here.
Mm, they must have thought they were watching a ghost.
Yes. Beautiful yes. Segue.
Indeed.
Gosh, you are a champion at these.
It wasn't difficult this time around.
Oh, so, God. Yes,
from a Scottish legend to something a bit more recent, but also nice and spooky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say that there is some talk in involving a suicide and mental health. In this, I will give you a warning before I get to that bit, and there will be timestamps in the description down below, so you know when to skip forward to, okay? Mm-hmm. But this, I chose this because I didn't want to do another gruesome horror murder story like I've done the last 2 years running.
Whoops.
And then this one, it went, oh, wow, this is darker than I thought it was going to be. So, yes, I'll get into it. Just yeah, this is quite a ride, guys, so strap in. It was October 31st, 1992, and families in England were gathered around the television watching the BBC's Halloween viewing. Families had enjoyed cheering on the contestant on Bruce Forsyth's Generation Game, gasped at the drama on Casualty, and had been brought up to date by the evening news and sports update. At 9:25 p.m., you'd think that the kids would have been sent to bed. But thanks to promotions throughout the day, everyone was waiting to see what would happen in the next show. Late evening viewers were greeted by the respectable and very highly respected Michael Parkinson, as he welcomed them to an experiment in broadcast TV. Throughout the next hour and a half, he would cross from the studio to a house in Northolt, London, where Sarah Green, host of popular BBC Saturday morning kids show Going Live, was reporting on the events surrounding the Early family, who lived in, according to the in-studio expert, the most haunted house in England, after briefly saying the world. Thrown an American skeptic in the New York studio, Craig Charles, who would later find fame as Lister in Red Dwarf as the jokey presenter outside the house, and a phone number for people to call in to share their own spooky stories, and you have Ghost Watch. Ghost Watch was presented as a live broadcast, complete with Michael telling the audience at one stage that they would not be going back to their normal schedule of viewing. It starts calmly enough with Sarah playing the caring presenter, talking calmly to the earlies about their experiences. When the action cuts back to the studio, we see Michael getting comments from his expert guest, Dr. Lynn Pascoe, as well as footage and audio recordings from her time researching the family. There is footage shown early on of the girls in their bedroom as a thumping noise starts, objects are flung around the room before they escape with their mother as a lamp explodes. Through interviews with the family, we discover the youngest daughter had named the spirit in the house Pipes, after the mother had initially blamed the banging on the pipes in the house. As the program progresses, events at the house escalate, as noises are heard, pictures fall off the wall, and many a fleeting glimpse of a figure is spotted. Callers claim that events described in the show are happening in their houses, and that children are glued to the screen, refusing to look away. An audio tape is played of one of the daughters speaking in the deep, guttural voice of Pipes. The gent in charge of the phones reads reports of people describing a figure they see in the footage, or matching a recording done with one of the daughters a few months back that had never been published.
Ooh.
At one point, Michael reminds viewers that it's late and their kids should be in bed, something that could have been more appropriate at the start of the show. We hear banging on the walls, see pictures fall from the walls, building up to a crescendo of noise and panic when suddenly they lose the feed from the house. As they try to put things right, a picture appears of Sarah calmly playing a game with the girls, leading to much relief until Dr. Lynn points out that she can see the picture that fell from the wall is still up, meaning the feed isn't live. An anonymous caller tells Michael and Dr. Lynn of a previous tenant, illegally a subletting a room, so therefore had not appeared on any of the paperwork that had been researched, who never, he said, should have been let back in the community. This tenant had ended up committing suicide in a room under the stairs, remaining undiscovered for 12 days. When he was found, the cats he had kept in the room had started to eat his face, just for a nice extra gruesome twist. When the live feed is restored, we see a sound operator being taken away in a stretcher, and Mrs. Early escaping the house with one of her daughters. Inside the house, with the help of an infrared camera, we see Sarah frantically searching for the other daughter. She ends up at the room beneath the stairs, goes into the dark room despite all warnings, the door shuts behind her and the picture cuts out. Meanwhile, back in the studio, Dr. Lynn makes a proclamation that the TV show had turned the events of the evening into a nationwide seance. A wind picks up in the studio as people run, leaving Michael wandering around the partially darkened studio looking for a working camera. It finishes with him standing, cut off just below his nose, and starting to speak in the guttural voice heard on the tape earlier as the scene faded to black and the credits rolled. Okay, look, I tried to condense that description down, but I actually watched Ghost Watch in preparation for this podcast, and a lot of stuff happens. Incidentally, it's available to view freely on archive.org, and the link's down in the comments. We'll get back to that later. Seeing it with 21st century's eyes, it's easy to see it for what it was. A fairly clever, spooky Halloween special that was trying to be a bit different. Now think of a family. Parents who are fans of Michael Parkinson, kids who enjoy seeing Sarah Green on Saturday mornings, back in 1992. This special predated things like the Blair Witch Project and the whole found footage phenomenon by about 7 years. The only information indicating it was a work of fiction in the lead-up was a TV guide describing it as a drama. In a nutshell, people thought it was real. Anyone who caught the number given on screen reached a recorded message advising it was fictional if they could get through. Those who couldn't get through called the general BBC switchboard in absolute droves. It is estimated over 30,000 calls were received about the show within a single hour, and many were complaints. Most were about panicked children who couldn't sleep. One woman said her husband had been so scared he soiled himself. There was even a claim that the tension caused by watching the show caused one woman to go into premature labour. The BBC quickly apologised, and it was revealed the writer of Ghostwatch had initially planned it to be a six-part drama series before it was turned into a scare-packed Halloween special. Mike Smith, the man who was in charge of the Ghostwatch phone-in line and real-life husband of Sarah Green, stated that he had tried to get disclaimers added to the show before it aired and was told not to worry. The BBC declared Ghostwatch would never be shown again, though it did get a DVD release in 2002, and Sarah Green appeared on a number of children's shows to assure younger viewers that it was all pretend and she was fine. That wasn't the end of it, though. In 1994, the British Medical Journal reported on the cases of a number of children who had been having trouble sleeping and having panic attacks, attributing the symptoms largely towards post-traumatic stress disorder caused by their viewing of Ghostwatch. Okay, now this is a disclaimer time. The following is the most tragic part of this whole story, and this is where that trigger warning really applies. So please, if you want to skip over it, have a look in that description below for the timestamp of when you want to go through to. So I'm going to pause for a bit. Last chance. The most tragic story to come from Ghostwatch occurred 5 days later. An 18-year-old factory worker with, to use the term at the time, learning difficulties, had become obsessed with ghosts and their potential presence in his home. He committed suicide, leaving a note behind for his parents which stated, quote, "If there are ghosts, I will be with you always as a ghost," end quote. His mother and stepfather lodged a complaint with the Broadcasting Standards Commission, BSC for short, claiming that Ghostwatch had caused their son's death. The BSC findings stated, in summary, end quote, "The BBC had a duty to do more than simply hint at the deception it was practicing on the audience. In Ghostwatch, there was a deliberate attempt to cultivate a sense of menace. The presence in the programme of presenters familiar from children's programmes took some parents off guard in deciding whether their children could continue to view." End quote. In an interview over 20 years later, Michael Parkinson stated, quote, "None of us thought we were creating something that would be one of TV's most remembered programs. It was a simple ghost story based on a fairly ordinary premise that there's a show on television and things start to go wrong. It was only when I saw it back that I realized it had a certain kind of power," end quote. The sense of menace and public panic has led to Ghostwatch being compared to Orson Welles' broadcast of War of the Worlds. But as we learned in a previous episode of this very podcast, it is unlikely that even the infamous radio play caused as much panic as Ghostwatch. What the Halloween?
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. See, I also watched the Ghostwatch with program with Trev yesterday, and honestly, I could see where people would have thought it was real.
Yeah, there's quite a few details I left out in my summary, but from probably about a third of the way in, it was very clear that kids should not have been watching this show.
Definitely not. Definitely not. No, we wouldn't even let our kids watch it.
Yeah. Yes, yes, indeed. So, but yeah, like I said, it's freely watchable on the internet. So if you want to check it out,
go for it.
Go for it, but don't let the kids watch it, okay?
No, please don't.
Yes, even though there's a kids presenter in there. Oh, dear.
Oh, gosh. It's, oh, no. No, no.
No?
No,
no. No, no, no. Well, that's What the Halloween 3.
Ooh, 3. Gosh, we're doing well, aren't we?
Yeah, indeed. It probably didn't help. Well, it probably doesn't hurt that our second episode was a Halloween episode when we first started. So there we go.
We did well.
We get a birthday episode followed by the Halloween episode.
Oh, you lucky people.
All good. All good. What a way to start a new What the History year.
Yeah. But that was 2 years ago. Three. Is that three? Two.
Two.
Sorry.
But no,
that's 2 years ago.
But you know, we just had a birthday. It's yes, a new What the History year.
Oh, so we're not starting it in January. We're not doing calendar years, are we? We're doing birthday.
This is what the history years.
What the history years? They've got their own special. Oh, that's so cute.
Yes, and speaking of,
we love you, What the History.
And speaking of special,
oh my gosh. You guys are going to love this. Oh. We love this. This is amazing. So please, take it away, Trev. Tell everyone.
So if you want to make life a little bit easy for yourself in accessing this awesome podcast and also our Big Brother podcast, The Rufus Project, they are both now on Spotify.
Yes.
And Stitcher. So, a nice big podcast network. And one of the, probably the most popular streaming service on the planet.
Good on you, What the History. And thank you, Spotify. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Stitcher.
Absolutely. I am working on making What the History easier to find in Spotify. So if you have some issues, look, just you can go to our homepage, you can go to our Facebook page. There will be links taking you directly to the Spotify page for What the History, where you just got to hit that follow button and you'll always be able to stream our latest episodes.
That's right. We want to make things easier for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the podcast, I'm sure people have noticed, we've only got about 10 episodes available at a time. If you want to catch any of our backlog, that's when you can start checking out the other stuff. You can head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you can access our full archive, and you can leave comments below the episodes and have all sorts of fun things there. You can find us on Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter, @pod_what, or have a search for the hashtag WTHpod. And that should point you to something of ours somewhere. It'll be there.
That sounds good.
Yes. And, you can also send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com. God, there's so much to remember now.
I know. Yeah, I'm going to have to write this down. I don't know how you remember it off the top of your head.
I sometimes almost plug the wrong podcast stuff in opposite podcasts, so, you know.
Oh, it all comes out in the wash, eh?
It does. You know, the whole Rufus Project Network stuff, it's all good. Mm. Oh, yeah, we've got the YouTube channel as well, the Rufus Project YouTube channel.
Yes.
If you actually watch this podcast on the YouTube channel, I didn't really mention them in my story, but I'll be putting up some drawings that kids did in that video post Ghost Watch, which I honestly found one of the creepiest things about it.
Major trigger warning to those as well. Creepy children.
Creepy children drawing.
Creepy children drawing.
Yes, including the...
Holy hell.
Yeah, the one of the studio with pipes in the studio, Michael Parkinson. And then in the bottom corner, there's a set of stairs with Sarah Green underneath them. It's like, God. You poor child.
Oh, no.
Okay.
God, I'm traumatized. Oh, my Lord.
So, yeah, look, I hope you enjoyed our What the Halloween episode. We would love to hear from you what you thought, if you have any bits of bizarre history that you think we should look at. And if you want to know more about anything we've talked about, we have our list of references down in the podcast description below on that homepage. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, there will be a link in the description through to the podcast page. So you'll have all those links available if you want to know more, because there is so much more.
Yeah, let us know if you're going to Edinburgh. Go see Maggie Dixon's. It's a gorgeous little pub.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and Grassmarket also has Scotland's smallest pub called the Wee Pub. It's so cute. It can only fit 20 people. It's tiny.
Sound like some of the bars I've been in Brisbane. And every available looking cruddy.
Oh, yes, Brisbane. Mm. Oh, bless you, Brisbane.
Yes.
Trying to be like Melbourne. Bless your cotton socks. Keep trying.
Yeah.
We love you, Brisbane.
And on that note, we will be back on your favourite podcast app, Stitcher or Spotify or online. Or you can do on Facebook or what, all those places.
Oh, you know what to do. Indeed. You're smart. You're clever. You listen to us.
Yes, indeed. And like I said, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Good night and happy Beltane.
Farewell.